morning, everyone. Thank you for coming and starting this beautiful day so early. We're thrilled to have the provost and the vice chancellor at Syracuse University with us, so I'm asking Bea Gonzalez to come up and introduce her.
Buenos dias. Good morning. So, Michelle G. Wheatley is the vice chancellor and provost at Syracuse University. She came to Syracuse in May 2016, having previously served as provost and vice president for academic affairs at West Virginia University. She brings to Syracuse more than three decades of teaching, research, and administrative experience in higher education. As Syracuse's chief academic officer, she is leading the implementation of the university's academic strategic plan and other strategic academic priorities, including an enhanced focus on research and the creation of a university-wide internationalization council. She has also taken a lead role in advancing enrollment and funding priorities tied to academic goals and created new structures to better attract and retain outstanding graduate students. Prior to coming to Syracuse, she co-created West Virginia University's first comprehensive strategic plan and oversaw a campus-wide reaccreditation process. She also implemented a series of retention and graduate initiatives, facilitated multiple global partnerships, and oversaw more than $93 million in sponsored research expenditures. Among her signature legacies was the creation of the Women's Leadership Initiative, a program that has driven career advancement opportunities for campus women through networking and skill-building workshops. And on top of that, she's a lot of fun to be with. She enjoys the communities that she lives in. And please join me in welcoming Michelle Wheatley to Syracuse and to the podium.
Well, good morning to all of you. Okay, I want a show of hands to begin with. How many of you this morning woke up and felt Syracuse proud? Wow. Double wow. I was at the game last night, and what an ending that was. The buzzer beater. And as I watched all these people just storm the court, I was watching the spirit that resides here in Syracuse. I looked at my Twitter feed and somebody had posted a picture of the crowd and said, just down here partying with 30,331 of my best friends. But the atmosphere, if you weren't there at the Dome, the atmosphere was just totally exhilarating. And I just looked at it. I actually filmed it on my iPhone. And anytime I feel down in the doldrums, I'm going to replay that because it's really deeply symbolic of what of the spirit in this place, and how we can all come together around such a great athletic victory. And you know, Syracuse University is very well known for its athletics brand. Syracuse University lives and works day to day in the city of Syracuse. And I was thinking just how great it would be if we could get 30,331 people just jumping up and down like that because of other kinds of successes. You know, successes with our P20 continuum in education, you know, retention and graduation rates, economic development opportunities. You know, it's there in us. We have the spirit to really feel good and do great things, to start as the underdog and finish on top. And all we have to do is to come together. So I wanted to start off by saying that, you know, Syracuse University is exceedingly proud to be in Syracuse, almost 150 years of shared history. And we care very deeply about the city of Syracuse, central New York, and the state of New York. And I like to say, you know, what's good for the city of Syracuse, central New York, the state of New York, the United States, and the world is actually good for Syracuse University. So even though we share our name with Syracuse, we really have to think now about the kinds of problems that the nation and the world face, and we all have to come together, and we have to storm the court, and we have to really execute the plan, right? It's all about being in the right place at the right time, knowing what needs to be done, and executing that plan. We saw that last night, and we're very excited about it. But, you know, we have that capacity, too. We can all do that. We've got to set our eyes on the prize. We've got to work together. We've got to execute the plan. And so that's what I'm going to be talking about today. I would like to thank you for this opportunity to venture forth to the Gifford Zoo and to really start to explore some regional neighborhoods. They've kept this secret from me about Tipperary Hill and all these good establishments that, you know, as a Brit, I probably need to explore. So I'm going to put that on the list for the Hubs and I to really get to know the area a little bit better. I'd like to thank you for coming out to listen to me. This is early in the morning. You have a lot of things you can do, and so I want to make your time here worth your attendance. And I'd also like to thank all the people who are going to listen to all of us on the radio broadcast later in the weekend. So just a very quick introduction to sort of who I am and what I've done. You know, I'm a typical product of what is now the global industry of higher education. You know, I've lived and worked and been educated all over the world. I've spoken multiple foreign languages. I really care about a number of different regions in the world. And what we're seeing now is that higher education is like every other multinational industry. It's become globalized. And in a way, what we're able to do at Syracuse is to open up the eyes of our students to the world. And Syracuse is a great laboratory in which to do that, because this has always been a very diverse community that's so welcoming to people who are different. So born and raised in North London, you can probably tell that from my accent. This is a North London accent, north of the River Thames. And educated at Birmingham University, which is the equivalent of like the MIT, a very strong science and engineering faculty. I left in 1980 with my doctorate, and I worked in Calgary, Canada, as a postdoctoral fellow doing biomedical research for the Alberta Heritage Foundation for Biomedical Research. Very interesting program where the province of Alberta was reinvesting the oil and gas revenue back into what is now called STEM education, research and development, which was very, very forward thinking. So when I was interviewed at Syracuse and people said, you know, it's very cold up here, Michelle, I said, you have no idea. I lived in Calgary where we had to plug the cars in the parking lot to make sure the engines didn't seize up while we were in work. Then I went from one of the coldest places in the continent down to the University of Florida to spend the first 10 years of my academic career and built a research lab and educated students in a very robust, you know, AAU institution. Gainesville, for those of you who know it, is a great college town. But then what I want to share with you is the time that I spent in Dayton, Ohio. I lived there from 1994 to 2010. We moved our family there largely because it was an opportunity for us to raise our kids in a very Midwestern environment. Dayton was a city very much like Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Syracuse, New York. These are all what you could call industrial cities. They're about the same size, you know, sort of 750 to a million, I would guess, in population. And they were all really developed around location, access to transportation routes, be it waterways, railways, trails, roads. And as such, they became sort of the heart of the industrial manufacturing machinery that really defined, some would say, the golden years in the history of the United States. And it was different things in different places. But in Dayton, Ohio, it was Delphi Chassis, National Cash Register. And in Pittsburgh, it was Bethlehem Steel. And over here in Syracuse, it was a variety of other things. You know, Carrier, it was glass. It was a variety of other kinds of industries. So while I was in Dayton, what I saw was the decline from the great years of manufacturing to everything went. And so now Delphi Chassis is shut. The last truck has been produced there. And many of these large corporations have just gone away. And so I saw what it was like to go from boom to bust. And I also saw what it meant for communities to come together and to develop the plan in order to really try to rescue and regrow the economy. And in many ways, that is done with different emphasis. And I think we've all probably studied Pittsburgh. I bet you've been over to Pittsburgh to try and look and see what they're doing so well. One thing we know is that we're now moving into the knowledge economy. And so it's less about making things. If we are making things, it's going to be about additive manufacturing or different ways of manufacturing. But it's also about solutions and thinking. And the bedrock of the new economy is really education. And so it's very important for any of these cities that are trying to reinvent themselves to have a very robust P20 spectrum or consortium is what we're calling them. It's where education is working together and where families will move and come to educate their kids through the public school systems and onto a collection of institutions that work together. And I'm talking about public institutions, private institutions, community colleges, all working hand in hand. And so what I want to talk about today are some specific things that are going on at Syracuse University. But as I speak, I'm going to be talking about our new way of thinking about Syracuse and about the partnerships that need to be developed moving forward, because we do want to be good neighbors. Clearly, you know, we're living there on University Hill, closely adjoining ESF and SUNY Upstate. We also are developing some great partnerships with Le Moyne College. We want to really try to do what we can to really work together. As I said, we're all in this. We've got to develop the plan, and then we have to execute. So I want to tell you a little bit about why I was attracted to Syracuse University. I fell in love with the place actually about 15 years ago. I was working, as I mentioned, at Wright State University in Dayton, Ohio, initially as chair of biology and then subsequently dean of science and math. And one of the things that I developed was a large set of programs around the disability lens, because as we're moving into the knowledge economy, people who are differently abled, you know, have physical disabilities, have just as much capacity to be inventors and creators of knowledge. And I'm sure you know that Syracuse University has had a long history in this domain, serving people who are different and particularly working around the lens of disability. And so some of my students who graduated on programming that I was involved with, one of them, one of my favorite students, came over to Syracuse to go to graduate school. And so my first visit here was actually to come and visit my my colleague. And, you know, she showed me around the region and showed me the tour of campus. And, of course, I was just like a tourist and never even remotely thinking I would one day be the provost, but very impressed by what I saw. The other thing is that I have, in addition to my day job, I'm married and I have three children. And at the time, I had a son and twin daughters. And I realized what a rich history this part of the world presents. And unlike most parents who take their children down to Disney and whatnot, with my friend who worked here, we actually developed sort of a tour of the women's suffrage movement for our young girls. I had twin daughters who were probably at the time about seven, and she was involved in the Big Brothers Big Sisters program in Syracuse, and she had a little sister about the same age. And so we toured all the sites, and we visited, you know, Harriet Tubman's grave, and we actually spent our summer vacation in central and upstate New York because of the rich history that you have. And now as your provost, I realized that I hadn't really included in that tour the Haudenosaunee history, the lore of the great peace, and so much that you have here in terms of recognizing that the indigenous populations have got so much that we can learn from them. And so in a way, I find this to be a very interesting part of the world. Not only do you have an amazing history with suffrage, with the Underground Railroad, with the Native Indigenous people, but you've also got tremendous access to a large swath of the population of the United States. And don't ever complain about Hancock Airport. I've lived in some really small towns where you can't get anywhere. Some of these college towns are like that. I think the idea of being able to fly very quickly to some of the major population areas in the United States is an amazing, amazing asset. So let me talk a little bit about what's going on at the university and what my role is there. For those of you who don't know that title, Vice Chancellor and Provost, Provost is an interesting word. A lot of people haven't heard it before. But what it really means is first among equals in the academy. And my job over there on the Hill is to really be in charge of all of our academic programs. And that really is from soup to nuts. It's really from identifying students, you know, who could succeed at Syracuse, making sure we bring them on board and give them a tremendous, an unsurpassed experience, a great experience in the classroom and outside the classroom. It's important part of my role to be hiring the faculty, to be providing for the faculty the right kind of infrastructure, the right kind of professional development so they can be great teachers and researchers. And then we also want to think about what it is we do in terms of launching our students into communities. Our students are our best assets. They're our best advertisement and public relations department. I consider them technology transfer because what we do with our students at Syracuse University will then go and change the communities they return to, and many of them will stay here for whatever reason. And we also have to remember that Syracuse University is in Syracuse. And so I will be talking about some of our intentional partnerships around community initiatives and some of the next steps in our great announcement about the new role that B. Gonzalez will play. So that's kind of what I do, and it's quite a big job, but, you know, I've done the job elsewhere. I didn't finish the journey for you after my time in the Midwest raising my own family. I was called to serve at West Virginia University as their provost. West Virginia is, of course, a large land-grant university with a comprehensive health sciences. So, you know, I come to you very well prepared and, you know, really ready to serve. And I'm approaching the end of my first year. So, you know, I'm not going to be able to be in that honeymoon period too much longer. So this is where execution of the plan becomes really important. Let me talk about some of the things that are going on. And first of all, many of you probably have visited us recently. If you haven't, then please come over when the weather is good, like on a day like today. You'll notice there's quite a bit changing on campus, and you've probably heard and read in the press about a number of initiatives under Chancellor Siverud's leadership. Of course, people often think of the infrastructure whenever they think of the university. And we do have some iconic buildings, and we do have a great footprint, not only on our main campus, but on our south campus in other parts of the city with the warehouse. And we have facilities in other parts of the state and, of course, across the world. And so, in a way, Syracuse is everywhere. And everywhere is Syracuse. So we refer to our infrastructure as the campus framework. And there have been quite a few upgrades and changes. If you are an alumna or an alumnus of the university, you'd be surprised what you would see if you walked around. And what we have to do is we really have to make sure we take care of some of these iconic buildings. Taking care of them means making sure that they're, you know, up to code and that they really have cutting-edge technology, because the ways in which students learn has very much changed, probably since many of the days when we were all, you and me both, were students ourselves. So one of the most obvious things, of course, is the Einhorn Family Walk, which was also known earlier in the year as the Promenade. We've sort of created a lot more walking space so that we can really extend. Our students will pour out of our iconic buildings, and they'll have places where they can gather and where learning can continue. And, of course, a large place with a large footprint. has a lot of plans. And so we really are constantly looking at the condition of our buildings. We need to really look at what it is our students need in order to learn effectively. And we've got to try and figure out how we're going to improve what we have and build what is required to move forward. So one of the things you've probably read a lot about is the National Veterans Resource Center. This is largely the brainchild of a group of thinkers that have been very capably led by Michael Haney, who is Vice Chancellor for Innovation and Strategic Initiatives. And we've identified that when we look back on the history of Syracuse, post-World War II, there was just a big explosion in the university because of welcoming back the GIs. And that then led to us becoming a highly ranked research university. And so what we're looking at now is encapsulating what is so different about veterans that can really lead us to give a better education to all students. When I'm asked about why veterans, this is my answer. Veterans are people who have dedicated much of themselves and come back very transformed from their experience. They know a lot more about the world. They know about themselves. They have new and evolved ideas about their own careers. And for many of them, they have been changed by that experience. So I consider them to be leaders in disruption and responding to disruption in one's life. And when you look at the world right now, and if you have grandchildren or children that are young adults, their world isn't going to be one that we'll be able to identify. It's going to be very disruptive. Their careers will be disruptive. The political situation of the landscape will change. And so we need to really think about how we educate for resiliency and to deal with disruption. And that, I think, is the benefit of us investing a lot of time and effort in the Veterans Initiative. As you know, one of my major roles is leading the academic strategic plan, and I want to talk a little bit about some of the goals of the plan and what we're doing around those goals. So the first goal in the strategic plan is the reason we're in business, which is to provide an unsurpassed experience for all students coming to Syracuse University. Unsurpassed, best in class. We want to really be able to compete in the higher ed marketplace, which itself is very crowded, for the best students, the brightest and the best. We want to bring students from diverse backgrounds in, and we want to be able to give them an amazing experience. And what is that? Well, of course, I can tell you what it is from an academic perspective. It's preparing students to be lifelong learners and to be the thinkers, the creators, the discoverers of tomorrow. Given that, there's going to be so much disruption in our world. How do we best do that? What we need to do is be training students to have depth of understanding or knowledge in one silo. My area is, happens to be in comparative physiology. But we also need to train people so that they understand or are cross-trained in understanding of a number of other areas. We refer to these as nexialists because they're students who can work at the nexus of two domains of knowledge. And I think the strength for Syracuse University moving forward is we've got great STEM fields, we've got engineering, we've got great sciences. And many of you know that we're talking about the STEM fields as the hot fields. These are the areas where we have great employment opportunities. It's really where the technologies and the solutions largely come from. But in addition, we've got an amazing Whitman School of Management, which will allow our inventors and creators to take their products into the marketplace. We have a great law school. We have great Newhouse Communications. We have education. We have, great arts. This is a community where there's amazing arts, and we partner with Syracuse Stage. And so as I think about a student for tomorrow, what strength lies in Syracuse is the fact that they can become experts in one field, but we can cross-train them in these other great fields that define the human condition, that will undergird the policy, the communications, the education, the arts, and everything we do these days in terms of addressing complex problems will require people who have great understanding of their own field, but in the context of these broader fields. We also want to make sure they have a great time while they're at the university. And by having a great time, I'm not referring to Tipperary Hill and the shenanigans. I'm referring to educating a complete person. You know, we have a very, it's a very precious time in the lives of young people. They're 18 years old, so technically they're adults, but they're not yet full-fledged young adults. They're going to be with us for 4 years, and during that time, they're going to learn so much about themselves, and they're going to learn so much about the world that surrounds them. So we want to make sure they have that holistic experience, that they have the opportunity to study abroad, that they have the opportunity to interact with many of the international students we have on campus, that they have opportunity to explore other communities. And for many of our students, they may not have been in communities like Syracuse, New York. So for them, it's eye-opening. And they get to study with students who are very different from them. So I think that, you know, as we think about the stuff that happens outside the classroom, it's just as important as the stuff that happens inside the classroom. We're calling this the extracurricular program. And we also want to make sure that students can apply their knowledge. And students are very different these days. They want to have meaning in everything they do. And they want to ask you, why am I learning this? They're not compliant. They don't just sit there in classrooms and nod their heads and do difficult math problems, which was the way it was when I was in school. They're like, why do I need to know calculus? Why do I need to know a foreign language? Why do I need to know? And the answer to that is we need to show them through application of knowledge what is important to make the world a better place. And I think this is where Syracuse University can partner so well with the community. And we do this in a myriad of ways. I mean, we have Falk College, where we have so many different programs that focus on the human condition, and where we train the professionals that are working in communities with real issues of communities. We train teachers. We've got a tremendous school of education. We have practitioners doing clinics in our law school. You know, there are so many avenues through which we can expose students to the answer to the why question. And that really brings me to the new role that's being created for Bea Gonzalez, who, as you know, is a stalwart of this community. I mean, has been raised in Syracuse. So, you know, I think what is very important when we work in communities is the credibility factor. And, you know, as we move into communities and do community-based work, we really have to know that we have people who can really serve as the conduit between the university and the community. And for us, as we move forward with the academic strategic plan, that's going to be Bea Gonzalez. And we are right now invested in a pretty robust discussion across the university about what community engagement needs to look like in the next decade. And of course, you know, this is a big city with a lot of needs. We need to make sure that we align our resources with the greatest needs of the community. But we also need to do this in very smart ways. So we're very happy to be able to do this through Bea, and you'll need to stay tuned and hear more about that at a later time. A couple of other things I want to talk with you about. You know, one thing I didn't share with you about my own journey is that I spent about 30 years of my life doing biomedical research and building a lab, training students, training the thinkers of tomorrow, doing experiments. Chancellor Siverud asked me the other day, you have a very high threshold for frustration. And I said to him, I have spent 30 years doing experiments in labs. Most of them failed. Coming back the next day, using the scientific method, what do I change? For those of you who think science is about, you know, the big discovery and it's all very glorious and happens one day with no effort. I mean, you really need to see how hard some of our researchers actually do work. So, you know, I think that one of the things that's very unique about Syracuse, we have this amazing opportunity on our doorstep right now. Last year, you probably heard that we were elevated or promoted to a new Carnegie classification, which is research very high. And we want to really grow our research reputation. And we believe it's very important to educate students, undergraduate students, in a research environment. And people will say, why would that be important? Why can't students be educated online or at another kind of institution? And this is the answer I give. Because what happens in a research-intensive university, as you educate undergraduates, you have these intellectual collisions. You know, the very naive, impressionable student who's beginning to learn starts to work with a researcher, a person who is an author, a person who is a painter. And all of a sudden, that innovation is sparked in them. It's a very important part in the development, not only the social development of these young people, but the intellectual development of these young people. And those intellectual collisions are going to spark the truly great thinkers of tomorrow in whatever they do. They're going to be better thinkers. They're going to be better physicians. They're going to be better lawyers. They're going to be better parents. They're going to be better voters. They're going to be better small business startup gurus. They're going to be better communicators because they learned in the company of people who have not yet finished their own intellectual journey. So this is exceedingly important. So we are working on looking at some internal restructuring and structures that are going to support our research operation. We're looking at the investments we need to make in certain areas. I mean, identifying areas that are good for Syracuse University. And I talked earlier about my thinking is that the strength of Syracuse University, not only in the education of students, but in the research domain, lies in training students for excellence in their field, but they also know all these other areas, and that applies to our researchers as well. We have great interdisciplinary research that sort of intersects at areas that are very important to the future of the nation and the world. The second thing I want to talk about is the importance of internationalization. We have started up an internationalization council because globalization, internationalization is a very important part of the academic strategic plan. And as you might have noticed, one in five of our students comes from elsewhere. I talked about higher ed being now a global industry. And so they like Syracuse, and it's very important that we promote Syracuse as a great place to study, a great place to live. And the international students, again, they can become our best teachers. These are 18-year-olds who are brave enough to leave their country of origin and come a long way and learn in a foreign language. This is what all of our students need to be capable of doing as they graduate from the university. So we have a number of initiatives. I mean, clearly our international programming has grown significantly in the last several years. And so we need to make sure that we're attending to the needs of international students, as well as we're trying to change the conversation. At one point in time, universities admitted international students and then sort of like prepared special orientations for them, clearly identifying that they were sort of different. It was us versus them. And now we're trying to really, you know, reinvent some of the things we do at the university to recognize that we all need to be globally educated. So when we bring our new students in, we need to train everybody to understand the cultures of other parts of the world. This brings me to another goal of the plan, which is exceedingly important to me personally, and I know it's important to B. Gonzalez and to all of us on the administrative team at the university, and that would be diversity and inclusion. We all know from everything we read that the demographics of the United States are changing big time. As you know, within 20, 30 years, we will be a majority-minority population, primarily Hispanic-born. So we laughed at the fact that B was trying to explain to us in Spanish what we were talking about. And, you know, we need to all go with the program here, and this is exactly where our communities are going to be heading. You know, we need to think about the knowledge economy, and we need more thinkers. In this nation, we need to elevate the level of academic preparation of the entire population of the United States. When you look at innovative nations, they have 60% of their population have at least a two-year degree and possibly more. We are nowhere near that in the United States of America, and we are nowhere near that in the state of New York. The reason is because many of the things that I started out talking about, industrialization, manufacturing, if that's gone, the parts that will come back are going to be the high-tech approaches. You know, if you take your car to the car to be the auto mechanic, right? Those guys now have to have tremendous computer understanding. You know, BMW technicians are trained over in Germany, you know, with computer science. This isn't just fixing a car anymore. It's the same with all of the extractive industries. I mean, I've just recently come to you from West Virginia, where there's been a decline in the coal mining industry. What that's really about is the fact that coal mining, the extraction of the coal, has become high-tech, robotic. It doesn't use as many people. So what we've got to do is we've got to prepare people with the smarts and the skills they'll need to be successful. This means that we've got to bring people who haven't engaged completely in higher education into our midst and launch them back into their communities educated. Now, because you heard a little bit about my journey, one of my biggest things, of course, is women in STEM fields. Because I've lived my life as a researcher, and I've had a pretty lonely existence because there weren't too many people who stayed with me all the way through my career. Other women. If you look at the opportunities right now for women, people of color, people with disabilities, veterans, we've got amazing opportunities, but we just don't have enough of these people coming to get higher education, and we've got to do better. So we have a big initiative on diversity and inclusivity, and this is not just talking the talk. If you were to look at my pedigree, you know, I've walked the walk. I've created programs and projects, and there are things we're already doing at the university. We're going to put our money where our mouths are, and we are going to change the future because we can't rely on the same kinds of people moving into business fields, law fields, science and engineering fields. We've got to educate an array and a diverse population of students. We want to be a workplace that really is well known, well respected, and that we do things collectively as one university. You know, if you think about Syracuse University, some of you might have closer associations with Whitman or Falk or the law school or, you know, just name a college. But last night, when that 30,000 people, 331 was the ticket count, 30,331, they were all storming the court. And I don't think they were down there saying, well, I'm from arts and sciences. They just weren't doing that. They weren't saying, well, I'm from architecture. Everybody came together last night and was so proud of Syracuse University. I think that as I looked around, you know, in my seating area, a lot of the people I know there are just native Syracusians, and everybody felt good. They came together around one common theme, and they came together as one people. And I think that that is really very deeply symbolic of the way that the Chancellor and I and others on the leadership team will be trying to serve Syracuse University and this broader community in the years ahead. You know, Syracuse University, we have to come together as one university first, and then we have to really embrace the legacy of the 150 years that we've shared in our history with Syracuse. We need to really build upon location, central New York, the state of New York, the United States, but we also have to recognize that the world is flat, that we have to really prepare our students for a global education. And one way to do that is to start by taking our own circles of influence and then trying to improve what we do each and every day at the university. And so I think I've probably spoken for long enough, and I'd now be just thrilled, gobsmacked, as I'd say in England, to answer some questions. Thank you for listening to me.
Thank you. I feel like you spoke my heart, because I have been living in Syracuse just like last 8 years. I came from the refugee camp. Oh. And you spoke the importance of education. I'm sorry, I'm emotional. My education started from the shade of tree. I never gone to the any good facility university. But my focus now is to encourage the young folks. And my daughter is 7 years old, and I'm pushing her for, as you mentioned, the bilingual, the multilingual things. And she is taking like 4 different languages parallel. I'm so happy that you spoke about it. And other thing I'm concerned is, we came from such a very poor background, and most of our families, they have very poor background. And while talking about the importance of education, just on the last result from Syracuse School District, we have a 9 out of 10, the students, they are from refugee background. They are most talented, hardworking, good people. I don't know how many ended up in the Syracuse University, but most of them are going out of city, out of state, going to the OCC, and after all, they're losing their education because they have to work hard for the family. Now, my question is, how can the Syracuse University emphasize and encourage and work with the school districts, not only in the Syracuse, beyond, because I have so many kids that I know across this country from my own community, but beyond that, and when I talk on the Facebook and social media across the world, many people know about Syracuse University. It's already a reputation in Nepal, India, and so many other countries. So how can the Syracuse University be a strong university in the central New York? Because we as in Syracusan and another Trump, I don't remember, but we focus on the education. So that's my point. So thank you.
Okay, well, first of all, I'm so inspired by your journey. And, you know, I think there are many journeys just like yours in our neighborhoods. And I think you put your finger right on the most important thing. Education is the answer. It's the answer to economic development. It's the answer to quality of life. It's the answer to some of the very interesting social and political problems we're facing right now. It's all about education. And so, you know, first and foremost, you know, Syracuse University would hold itself up as a place where we value education beyond everything else. I mean, our motto, you know, knowledge crowns those who seek her. It's all about education. So, you know, one of the great things about coming and talking to a round table like this is that you all have circles of influence, and you all know people and can actually change outcomes for individual students. I think as an institution, we're working hard on many partnerships with inner city schools. We have a lot of our students placed in environments where they can mentor and learn about the needs of a community, Syracuse community and other communities that are suffering from, you know, disparities, income disparities, disparities in education and healthcare. It's all about the widening gap. And we've really got to work together. I mean, first of all, I applaud you for offering up your daughter as saying, you know, she's going places, she speaks four languages, and just recognizing that we've got to bring everybody on board this bus with us. We can't do it alone. And that means students coming out of, diverse backgrounds, veterans who are returning who need to be educated. We've really got to stop thinking about education being a linear trajectory. It is for a lot of students, but for others, there are people who stop out for a while and then come back to college. You know, maybe they have families. So we've got to get people through an educational journey, and we have to work together to do that. And we're going to try to do the best that we can. I mean, clearly we can't be doing all things everywhere, which is why we're engaged in this exercise to figure out what is the best use of our time, talent, and treasure at Syracuse University to lift up this community.
Good morning. I'm very curious of the fact, with all the things you want your students to become, civics was not part of that equation, particularly with the Maxwell School on campus.
So one of the things about speaking without a script is that as you go through and name the colleges, that you always forget, you know, what are the best colleges is our Maxwell School. And citizenship and public service is very important. And as we move forward, training students to participate in democracy is probably the purpose of education, if you had to distill it down to one sentence. So each and every school is involved in this success moving forward.
You mentioned lifelong learning, and it was about 10, maybe 15 years ago that the university applied for a grant and received seed money to initiate a lifelong learning program for members of the community. My wife and I took a couple of classes in astronomy, and the program never proceeded after the seed money. So we really thought that was a very valuable program for members of the community. And I was wondering what your thoughts are about that kind of an effort.
Well, you know, I don't know much about that specific program, sir, so forgive me. You know, I would need to go back and check that out. But I do know that universities do provide sort of that intellectual milieu for the community. And they do it in a variety of ways. It could be through short courses. It could be through, public lectures. It could be through offering things in the arts. I would imagine that in any given week, a number of members of the community are on our campus just consuming things that we have available. In terms of, you know, structured ways of doing this, I would need to go back and talk to other parts of the university where this could be a program. But if you want to ask what I think philosophically, I think it's very important that universities set the intellectual tenor for a community, not just Syracuse. I mean, much of this could come from Lemoyne and from upstate. You know, there are many other great things going on campus. And by the way, we partner on a lot of things. So we're just as happy to go to some of their events to learn and to share some of the opportunities. So lifelong learning is here to stay.
Thank you for your remarks. I like to hear what you said about the student-centered effort at Syracuse University, and not only in the classroom, but outside of the classroom as well. And you're dealing with a whole person rather than just their academic education. And as you can see, I bleed orange as well. My question is, there's an effort to get the student body closer to the campus as far as housing is concerned. Now, what was the thinking about that, about the background of trying to get the students to live on campus or near campus?
Well, to be perfectly honest with you, I can't really speak in public settings about specific plans for residence halls and whatnot and where the students 5 years from now will be living, because the plan really isn't completely finished. I think that, I guess, a blanket statement might be that we need to make sure that students can live and learn in the right environments. And so irrespective of where they are, if they're in D.C., if they're in New York City, if they're over in London, we want to make sure that they have safe and convenient places to live and to learn. So we're looking at living and learning environments for all of our students on all of our campuses across the world.
Good morning. My name is Pam Brunet. I work at Leadership Greater Syracuse, which trains people to be active in the community. You have a lot to do, but you've also inherited a wonderful institution that's done many things. In order to make all of this vision possible, you're going to need all your employees to make that happen. Your employees are tremendous. I'm curious what your philosophies are on investing in your employees to help them get behind this vision and make this all actionable.
Well, you know, when we talk about Syracuse University, and of course you look on a poster or the website and you see all the iconic buildings, but at the end of the day, the buildings are just buildings. And Syracuse University is about its people, about all the faculty that have worked there, all the staff, employees, as well as all the students that have passed through those great buildings. So our people are our greatest asset. And as we come together on some One University initiatives, we are really trying to adopt some best practices in the industry of higher education. And a couple of these would be providing pathways for leadership development at all levels in the institution. That's faculty, staff, and students. And so we are trying to find ways that we can help nurture in-house leadership potential. Many people are place-bound and want to remain here, and so they should have trajectories for onward development. We are constantly looking at how we treat our employees. I mean, I almost hate to call them employees, because I just feel like it's a community of learners and that each and every person who works at Syracuse has an important role. I mean, I stop and meet Ed when I'm driving on campus. Ed's the guy who just mans the station, you know, admitting people onto campus. You know, because I feel he has a tremendous role every day making the place function. So we need to develop a culture of caring, a culture that appreciates the role everybody plays. And, of course, some of that is in how you treat people, how you recognize them. And some of that comes in benefits, compensation, where they work, how they work. It's a number of things. But I do try to spend a part of every day making sure that people I interact with know how much I appreciate the job they do to make the university function. It's like a small city.
I have kind of a two-part question. The first one has to do, was the Syracuse University involved in the recent consensus community development approach? And secondly, will the university be continuing into the future with the change of administration, having a very strong relationship between the university and the city?
The first question.
He wanted to know if Syracuse University was involved with the consensus study, which I know that we were. Let me, B can tell, because B was actually on the committee.
Yes, absolutely. B Gonzalez will answer this question.
B Gonzalez, the citizen, was involved in the consensus commission, not B Gonzalez, the employee of Syracuse University. How's that? Thank you.
And the second question was, will we continue to work intentionally with the city?
Yes.
And I think I was trying to illustrate through the remarks I made that when the name of the university is synonymous with the name of the city in which it resides, it is exceedingly important for us to be good neighbors, good partners in a number of things. Because as we try to recruit students from China, the first thing their parents will do is go online and Syracuse, where is that? And then start to read about the city. So really, our fates are interwoven. And so I would imagine that we will always continue to work very productively with the city of Syracuse.
Good morning. I have a mundane question, but first a preface. I am a triple alum of SU and have stayed in Syracuse and then worked for the university for 23 years, so I know the place quite well. My husband and I are on campus a couple times every week, going to lectures and sometimes classes. I don't know if you know this, but there is a class taught by Peggy Thompson in political science with students from OASIS who are over 50, most of them over 65, and honors students every second year. So there are a lot of collaborations going on, and we see other older adults on campus, and we get to interact with the students, and I think it's fun and it's important. But one thing we've noticed in the last 4 or 5 years, more like 2 or 3 years, is that it's easier to park near campus. And I'm wondering if this is intentional. I mean, it used to be a barrier to get there, and now it's much easier to go to, concerts, the 4 o'clock concerts at Krauss and the university lecture series and the law, politics, and the media, and what's the other one? Democracy, State of Democracy lectures. I mean, we go to all of them, and we usually don't have to bike in or, park 3 miles away. So I'm wondering if that's,
Oh, my goodness.
Is that intentional? Is it part of the... are you aware of that change that makes it easier for people from the community to get onto campus?
I think this could be the first time in 35 years in my career as a college administrator and a professor that I've ever, ever heard anyone compliment a university on the parking situation. That is absolutely a first. I'm not going to claim any responsibility for solving this problem. I mean, I think we've got wonderful facilities people that are really thinking about not only the facilities, but the timing of some of these public events, and then trying to facilitate people coming onto our campus to see what it is we're doing and to participate in some of these community-based initiatives. So somebody was thinking about this. It wasn't me because I wasn't here at the time. And I'll just go back and tell probably people like Pete Sala, what a great job they've done. If people are... Tony Callisto, yeah. Yep. So, and by the way, for those of you who wonder about how to do lifelong learning through the university, obviously this is one of our ambassadors. Thank you.
Hello, thank you for being here today. I'm going to address the elephant in the room. I'm sure everyone in this room understands that education is really important. A big barrier to a lot of people is the cost of education. I know that if you have enough money, it's possible. If you have very little resources, you can get help. But there's a big chunk of people in the middle I have one child who was really... She was afraid to go to college because she was afraid of the amount of debt. So I think we all agree that education is the key to build our economy, to build our community. How do you address the money part?
Okay. So, well, first of all, I would like to reassure you that one of the best things about the United States higher education ecosystem is that there are so many different offerings. And by the way, I want to let you know that I was always myself educated in public schools and in public universities and competed for scholarships. And my parents only had an eighth grade education. So I know there's many of you out there with similar stories. And so, for people that you interact with who are really bright and very motivated, there is a way. And I think the beauty of this ecosystem is that there is a whole landscape of ways to do this. And there is almost the perfect institution for each student. And we're all different. So, some students are very competitive academically. Some students are competitive athletically. Some students want to be in a very small, intimate environment to learn. Some students want to get the big, you know, a big power conference, athletics, the whole experience in a larger setting. Some people go to these mega campuses. You know, some campuses are now like 60,000 students. So I guess what I'm saying is we shouldn't imagine that one size fits all, and that we should be able to find a way for each and every student who has the intellectual capability to make their journey and find them the resources they need. So if I were to talk about Syracuse, we have a very a significant, you know, financial aid program, and we have a number of scholarships that are awarded. And so we like to think that if students present themselves with the academic wherewithal to really compete in our level of institution, that we will do our best to try to make that a reality. You know, I think families are probably looking at things in different ways. I mean, everybody manages their own personal finances in different ways. And so I think a lot of parents are now looking at how to do this. Because what we have seen is that in the last maybe, 15 years, even the big public institutions have migrated away from public support from taxpayer dollars and more towards, tuition and fees, which means in many cases students are taking out loans or their parents are remortgaging their houses and that kind of thing. Now, the one thing I want to remind everybody is that this is the biggest investment and the best investment that any person or any family will make. The average student in the United States graduates with about $25,000 in debt for their undergraduate degree. I don't know how many of you have financed weddings of children in your family recently. The average cost of a wedding in the United States these days is around $25,000. The average new automobile is around $25,000. My husband makes us keep the cars in the family on the road for many, many years, but a lot of people will trade their cars in routinely. And, you know, very sadly, we're in a culture right now where a lot of marriages don't last 7 years. The investment in a higher education will last a lifetime. And we show statistically that the earnings from having a undergraduate degree, that your lifetime earning will surpass that of a high school diploma, you know, by, I think it's somewhere in the range of about $1 million. So we've got to find a way to help people get to the part of the journey that they want, recognizing that there is a good fit for them, a fit academically, and a fit for their financial resources.
Please join me in thanking Provost Wheatley for joining us today.
Thank you so much.